Show, Phil Hendry.
Back here at the El Pacifico, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Gorgeous day today, by the way, out here at the old El Pacifico. Did you see it, Margaret?
I wasn't here. We were in Santa Monica. It was very, very beautiful, yes.
And I got a feeling that we haven't had a lot of rain in California, and I don't want to bore you with the details, because as you know, when it comes to weather, out here we are the biggest bunch of sissies the world has ever known. If it rains, we just, oh my goodness, you know. Not all of us, but it's just, and this winter has been pretty mild. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of rain. That generally means something bad. It means that when the summer rolls around, things are going to be dry.
Oh, and then we're going to have fires. Oh, God, thank you for reminding me. You know that we've got one home in the canyon up there.
Well, if I were you guys, I would make sure that you got the insurance up to speed, because I don't know. I don't want to predict anything.
No, if I were you guys, well, that right away makes me fear for...
Don't worry about it. I'm just saying, when it doesn't rain in the winter, you know.
Well, now that we've got that nice piece of news, but you are talking about Zsa Zsa Gabor, and having heard what you just said, I think I'd rather be her.
You'd rather be Zsa Zsa Gabor?
Yes, because if my home burns down, Phil, I'd rather be Zsa Zsa, who's been told that she can stay in her home for as long as she's alive, but then after she dies, I believe they've got to sell it, right?
Well, here's what happened. To a point, you're right, Margaret. The husband of ailing movie actress Zsa Zsa Gabor reached a deal on Friday that will allow the cash-strapped couple to stay in their Bel Air mansion for the remainder of her life. A Los Angeles judge ruled that Gabor's ninth husband, Frederick Prinz von Anhalt, could sell the four-bedroom, five-bathroom mansion in a deferred transaction. Under the deal, the buyer will allow Gabor, age 96, and von Anhalt to remain in the home for the last 3 years or until the actress dies and pay them $325,000 a year, Gabor's publicist John Blanchett told the Reuters news agency. Gabor, the Hungarian-born star of the 1950s film Moulin Rouge and Lily, has been in and out of a hospital since breaking her hip in 2010 and having her leg amputated in January 2011. She didn't have both of her legs amputated, Bud. She just had one.
I thought they said both. She woke up and the legs were gone.
What did he just say?
What are you talking about?
That's what I heard. Yeah, I heard that like in that movie, you know.
What movie?
Scream Again, man. You said the guy woke up and he pulled the covers back and his legs and was like gone.
Yeah, that's what they said. She woke up and she goes, ah!
You know, I ought to smack you just for that dumbass stuff.
What?
But what are you talking about, you jackass? She woke up, pulled the covers back, and her legs were...
Well, what are you laughing at that for?
Just the absurdity. You guys, you know, I talk about a movie, the next thing you know, you guys are... They didn't do that to her. They wouldn't do that to her. If they said, Ms. Gabor, we're going to have to take your legs, she's fully aware of it. It ain't some horror movie from the Hammer Film Studios.
But yeah, man, but what if she's too old to understand it?
Yeah.
And tell Phil what you thought about, Robert. If she's too old to understand it, and like she's what's it called?
What? Alzheimer's?
Yeah, she has Alzheimer's. And she's told, we're going to have to amputate your leg, and she doesn't know. But then she, gets better for, just a few minutes. And she says, well, I think I'll go.
Yeah, it's like she's got to go squeeze one, go to the bathroom.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, so she's going to get up and go to the bathroom, and she goes, ah, my legs is gone.
Yeah.
Did you guys both come up with that together, or was it just you?
No, I thought of it.
Oh, that was great.
That was excellent, Robert.
Fantastic. Wow, that you would just come up with that by yourself, that she just pulled the covers and went, ah.
Yeah, you're laughing about it.
Of course I'm laughing about it, you clown. No, she didn't have Alzheimer's and then suddenly got better and realized her legs were gone. The woman had diabetes and still does, and that often is the result. Blood circulation is compromised when you have diabetes, and in this instance, one of her legs was amputated. Let me just say this about that. You two guys are young, and you ain't worrying about those things right now. Someday you may have to deal with that.
Well, what do you want me to do about it now, man?
Yeah, they don't have a shot for it.
You can eat better instead of the crap that you eat. You can give yourself diabetes by eating garbage. Next thing you know, you got a blood sugar problem, and then the next thing you know... Off comes your leg. So one of these days, Bud, you'll be sitting in the hospital bed, and you'll come out of your Alzheimer's, and you'll go to the bathroom to, quote, pinch one off, and you'll pull back the covers, and you'll go, ah! Yeah, my legs are gone.
Shut up.
Yes, Sal, you don't like that, do you?
Cut it out.
No, I'm not going to cut it out. That could happen to you. So have a little charity and have a little compassion.
That would be funny, though, if it happened to you.
Well, if it happened to you.
Do you guys mind?
Oh.
Because I'm going to continue doing the show, or I don't want to interrupt your conversation you're having.
All right.
Gabor, the Hungarian-born star of 1950s films Moulin Rouge.
You already talked about this part.
Will you Gabor, the Hungarian-born star of the 1950s films Moulin Rouge and Lily, has been in and out of the hospital since breaking her hip in 2010 and having her leg amputated in January 2011. Von Anhalt put the house up for sale for an asking price of $15 million 2 years ago, citing financial difficulties and the cost of medical bills for Gabor. The decision is going to make her very happy, Von Anhalt told reporters after Friday's court hearing. Hopefully she'll be with us for more than 3 years. Her mother lived to be, did it say 100 or 102? I think 102.
How old is she now?
Zsa Zsa Gabor is 96.
Well, so all he wants is that she's going to live 4 more years? That's kind of, I think that's cold, man.
That's cold. He's going to say that she only lived for 4 more years.
He didn't say that. He's just saying, basically what he's saying is, I hope she lives a long time. 4 more years. Yeah, I hope she lives 4 more years. Anyway, Gabor's Hillside home is in one of the most exclusive areas of Los Angeles. The grounds were used to film scenes for the Ben Affleck Oscar-winning film Argo, as well as an upcoming HBO film about the life of late entertainer Liberace. Blanchett said, Gabor, this is not Kate Blanchett. I'm just kidding. It's John Blanchett.
Wouldn't that be if Kate Blanchett was her publicist as well as an actress? Like, she's doing those two jobs.
Well, it might actually save Kate Blanchett some money because she could do her own publicity.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, Blanchett said Gabor remained bedridden but was in better health recently than previous years and had enjoyed a 96th birthday party at the house in February, attended by more than 100 friends. There was booze, nudity.
Really?
I'm kidding. She's 96. All right, so there's Zsa Zsa Gabor. $15 million, man. How do you know, the cash-strapped couple... They got a house that's worth $15 million.
Yeah, but the real estate market's soft.
The real estate market may be soft, like your head. The real estate market may be soft, okay? But in that range, that kind of bread, it ain't soft, man. Those houses, they'll sell. And somebody's out there with the $15 million to buy it or, you know, somewhere.
Well, what do you think it would go for?
I don't know. It's not going to go for less than... If the 50, I just call it $15 million, okay? I don't know, what, 14, 12, 13? Up in that area of life, I got no say. I don't know. You know, when it comes to anything past a few million, I don't get it anymore. A $15 million spread, you know, that we're talking about a financial reality that the rest of us, it's not affected by these downturns in the economy. Those are people that have got, they're rich, they always were rich, they always will be rich, and no freaking recession, if they know halfway what they're doing.
Well, you don't think a recession would hurt people like that?
I don't think a recession is going to hurt someone in that financial bracket near the way it hurts the rest of us. I think somebody, and I'm not talking about the money that they've saved, I'm just saying that they're so far removed from, you know, the reality of all that. All right, so that's the story there. We're going to come back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry show with more news and information. Now, as you know, we signed R.C. Collins to a hosting deal. Herb Sewell has been in negotiation with us as well, and we're going to talk to Herb. Should we have Herb Sewell filling in for us when we're on vacation or when we're under the weather? I don't know. I have to be honest with you. I think it's possibly a bad idea. But we'll find out. We'll talk to Herb Sewell. We come back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth.
You've got to be kidding me. You don't
have
him.
The Phil
talking
Hendry Show.
Talking to him, filling in on your show? That's what I think about that.
Hold on. Hi, welcome back, Phil Hendry Show. We have been talking on our program here about We actually were talking about the man that set the record for the highest elevation that a human being has parachuted from. Remember, Felix Baumgartner was his name. I believe he was an Austrian. It happened in 2012. You remember we covered it, as did a great many other media outlets. And this man, Mr. Baumgartner, if you saw the video, it was quite impressive, and it was a moment that I thoroughly enjoyed, just the daring do of these people. And when I say these people, I think of all of these guys that do these things, whether it's free falling from 118,000 feet, not free falling, but there is a certain amount of that that's a free fall, and then you parachute the rest of the way. Whether it's setting some kind of a speed record, whether it is traveling around the world in a hot air balloon, and all of this stuff to me is fascinating. Jeff Dowder, a professor of mechanical physics at Caltech, has joined us. I wanted to ask you, Jeff, and by the way, how are you doing tonight?
I'm sorry?
How are you doing tonight? I'm a little fatigued here. It's been a long week, so I'm stumbling over my words. How are you?
No, I'm fine. You have to watch that, Mr. Henry, because if you have sleep deprivation, there's a loss of muscular control. And the reason why I'm sort of interested in how you did that is, if you ever saw a movie called The Bounty, in the movie, the Captain Bligh character, played by Anthony Hopkins, is set adrift, as what was happening to Captain Bligh. And anyway, when they finally landed on land, and Captain Bligh he got out of this launch, and he'd been in that launch for a long time. He'd been in that launch for like 3 months, after they were set adrift. And anyway, when he got out of the launch and he walked onto the deck, he was met by two Dutch soldiers, because New Kupan was a Dutch colony down in the New Guinea area, okay? And the first thing he said was, "My name is William Bligh." So in other words, he couldn't even say his name because his tongue was swelled up, Mr. Henry? And
really?
Yeah,
I mean, is that a matter of historical record, or was that just in the movie?
Well, I mean, it was in the movie, but it stands a reason, because if you're out on a boat for 3 months and you're not talking to anybody, and then all of a sudden you got to talk to somebody, you're probably going to go, "Oh yeah, stuff isn't going to work too good."
Well, he was talking to people. He had his crewmates there.
Well, that's true. I mean, he had a launch that had members of the Bligh, or whatever the ship, or the Bounty, I mean. But after a while, they were so tired, and they hadn't eaten anything, they probably didn't have a whole lot to say to each other, just like, hi. Or, I don't know what they said.
Well, what do you mean they said hi? What, they still have to sail the launch, don't they?
Well, yeah, they have to sail the launch. No, there's no record of what Bligh said. I mean, there is a record that Captain Bligh kept, because he did keep
Will you spit it out, man? I mean, I'm sorry. I don't mean to yell at you.
Well, no, he kept a log. He kept a log.
Yeah, kept a log. I bet he did.
Hey, man, I'm talking about a written log,
All right, hold on for a minute. Bud, would you knock it off?
What? I know, Jeff. We kid about it all the time.
Yeah, that's fine, but I'm interviewing him right now.
Yeah, this is an interview, man, okay? And when you come over to Mint Canyon, and Bo, by the way, said you took that pipe, so I don't know what...
I didn't take any pipe. I told him I left it on a... I told him I left it in the bathroom.
Where?
On a toilet tank.
He says it's on a toilet tank, man. Okay,
excuse me, guys. Can you work this out later, because we're having an interview?
Yeah, you're right, Mr. Henry. I'm sorry. So, Captain Bligh kept a log, and in the log he said that John Smith, who was the steward on the Bounty, had said to Bligh, "If I die, use my flesh as food, to feed the other guys." And Captain Bligh said to him, "No, that's not going to happen. We're not going to, I'm not going to, no way, I mean, I'm sure he didn't say no way, but he probably said whatever the 18th century version of no way was, which was probably... Maybe it was no way. I don't know.
I doubt it. Okay.
Yeah, he could have said no way.
I'm sure he said something like, "No, we're not going to do that."
Yeah, all right. I mean, whatever the version of no way was.
Well, what do you suppose that... Are we actually going to discuss this?
Who cares what the version of No Way was?
I'm talking about what the colloquial version was of No Way.
What?
In the 18th century, man.
Yeah, what'd they say? Did they go, no? No?
Yeah, maybe they said no. God.
I'm sorry, Mr. I was just trying to, you know, I wanted to make it authentic and everything.
No, it's authentic enough. Thank you. All right, so what's interesting to me, though, Jeff, is that Captain Bly, you said, had a swollen tongue when he got off of the launch and was on the dock, and he was being escorted by these Dutch soldiers. You say that it is very likely that that was an accurate portrayal in the film.
Yeah, I think it was, because, again, if you're spending months at sea, you haven't had anything to drink, there's very little water. I mean, there's ocean water, but what would that do? You drink that, and you're not supposed to do that. I mean, there's a lot of water around, you know.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that. How can a guy die of thirst if there's water everywhere?
Because salt water is poison.
Good God, you don't know that?
What do you mean?
If you drink salt water, it's like drinking poison, okay? The body will not absorb that. In point of fact, it will hasten your thirst and dehydrate you, and you lose your mind. What happens to the human body if it doesn't get water is not very pretty. And for Captain Bly, he apparently rationed the water, right, Jeff?
Yeah, they rationed it out, and they rationed it out, and they rationed it out. And they finally, they just rationed it out. But I'll tell you something. There was a fight that broke out. A lot of stuff happened on that launch before they finally got it in there. But then Bly said when he got off the boat.
You're all going blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I heard that, man. That's pretty funny.
Okay. Did you guys get your laugh?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I mean, I'm saying Bly got off the boat. He goes, my name is Cabrera. If his tongue was swolled up, as I suspect it was, and as other historians do indeed feel that it were, and, okay, if then this is what he would have said, because we do know that the Dutch soldiers have told us the first words out of his mouth were, my name is William Bly, I'm a British naval officer, and I'm reporting an act of piracy. That was the first thing that William Bly said to the Dutch soldiers that met him. But if he had not had no drink, if he had not had no water, it would have sounded like this.
Then the captain is it by? I had the. Wait a minute.
What? I'm starting all over again, Mr. Henry.
Yeah, fine. Go ahead.
What are you doing?
Hold on. Go ahead.
I'm showing you what William Bly did.
What he did or what he said?
Well, the way he sounded.
Yeah, the way he sounded. If he had a swelled up tongue.
So if he had a swelled up tongue, it would say. Remember what he said. He said, "My name is." My name is William Bly, or no, he goes, my name is Lieutenant William Bly.
His name's Captain.
Would you shut up, bud? No, he wasn't a captain. He was a lieutenant. He had not made captain.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so he goes, my name is Lieutenant William Bly. I'm a British naval officer, and I have to report an act of piracy. That's what we know, he said. It would have sounded like this, having not had water for a long time.
And then they said that there's a dime. And the biggest thing that's happened is I have to deter the act of piracy.
And, you know, it stands to reason that the Dutch would have opened fire on him. But they didn't. And that speaks to the commanding presence.
Wait. Hold on. Why would the Dutch have opened fire on him?
Well, Mr. Henry, I think it only stands to reason.
By the way, that's your favorite phrase here so far, Professor Doubter.
Well, I'm sorry, but it does stand to reason. It only stands to reason that if a guy is standing in front of you and he's talking like he's got his, you know what I'm saying, like he's from a world where the tongue is three times bigger than ours.
From a world. So these Dutch soldiers are going to assume right away he's an alien?
Not an alien, no, man, but I mean, they don't know what it is, and they're going to take precautionary measures in case the governor of the island is in route. You know, we do know that the Dutch had a governor down there.
Okay, fine, all right. So the fact that they didn't open fire on William Bly says what?
It says to me that William Bly had a very commanding presence. He also was a very reassuring presence. He probably is... Well, you guys are just going to laugh.
No, I'm not. We'll be right back. Hold on, please. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is asinine, and I'm begging you, Phil, I'm asking you now to conclude this call.
I got him scheduled for a half hour. What do you want me to do? We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
You understand,
I know.
You're making an ass of yourself with this guy going,
Margaret, I know what he sounds like.
Phil Hendry.
Hello, everyone. This is Margaret. Do you want me to?
Go ahead.
This is Margaret Gray. We're actually watching a show. The National Football League kicker, now retired, Jason Elam, and his trophy wife are out on a... what are you looking at?
What are you calling her a trophy wife for?
Because that's what she is. I'm going to start all over again. What's her name?
Well, her name's Tammy.
Oh, well, isn't that...
Margaret, I didn't know you were going to start ripping them.
No, I want to make a point. Jason Elam and his trophy wife, Tammy, oh my God, Tammy, are out here in Alaska, and they're looking for an island home. Isn't that nice? They're looking for a home that's got room for 5 children, a big kitchen. Yes, I'm sure, Tammy, that's what you want. A big kitchen, and now they're looking at all these different properties. Am I supposed to sit still for this garish display of wealth while people are eating out of garbage cans as they listen to this show? Your thoughts, Mr. Hendry.
Well, no, you don't have to watch it, Mark. Number one, I don't know who's eating out of a garbage can while they're listening to this show. Number two, because times are tough, does that mean I'm supposed to begrudge Mr. Elam and his wife the opportunity to look at a beautiful home? Yeah, maybe some of us can't afford it. But I like to look inside. I like to see what's, you know.
You like to see what they're able to afford. Look at this. It has its own bait shack. What is that about? Then it's got a little walkway that goes up through the trees that I'm sure Tammy just insisted on. God, I hate her.
What do you hate her for?
Because this woman... Let me explain something, Phil, because this is something you and the men listening. This woman landed herself a football player. I'll bet you money she talks like that. Number two...
No, wait. There's people listening.
May I finish? Because I've got a point to make. So she goes to Bronco Stadium or wherever she went to meet this guy, and she did what she did, wink, wink, to land herself an NFL player. Now they're walking up through the trees, and she has herself everything she's ever... I think...
Well, Margaret, you know...
No, I'm going to quote Bob Green on Nostradamus. Swamp running...
God! I don't think you should begrudge people their good fortune. I really don't.
Say, what's happened to you all of a sudden? You used to be fun. You used to be a guy that would sit there with me and badmouth these people right along with me. What's going on with you anyway?
I'm learning a little humility, okay? I'm learning a little humility. I'm learning how to let people have their success and not begrudge them that. And say, wow, aren't you fortunate? I mean, look at how hard they work. They got, you know, someday maybe you, maybe I. Well, you and Frank are set up. What are you talking about?
I don't like the way she did it, okay?
Margaret, let me ask you a question. How did you do it any different?
You.
Oh.
Wow.
You just slapped me.
That's right.
Man, she slapped you in the face, man.
Yeah, you call the police.
No, I'm not going to do it. Is Jeff still there? Jeff, you there? I'm sorry.
I heard the whole thing, man. Toby, yeah, 911. Toby's on the phone now. We probably have a cruiser out there probably pretty soon.
No. Don't have him call the cops.
Man, I just heard her slap you, Mr. Hendry, and I'm out here listening on the radio, and I'm sure all of your listeners heard as well the crack of her hand on your, well, was it your butt?
It was my face.
Okay. I don't know what she did. It sounded to me like hand against butt flesh.
No, man, it wasn't hand on butt flesh. It was a face. I would have told you. I would have made sure you was filming it.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. But, you know, I just think that in so many different ways, Mr. Henry, that was wrong and in so many different ways.
Okay, thank you. I'm trying to read a message. Hold on for a minute. Would you put him on hold? I'm trying to read a message here from, I can't open this up, Dan. So whatever message you sent me, you're going to have to send it again, I guess. Oh, here it is. This is interesting. I cannot open this message up to save my ass. How do you like that?
Well?
You slapped me in the face, okay?
You said that I did exactly what that swamp-running whore did to get my husband Frank, and no, I didn't.
You don't know what that woman did. You have no idea what that woman did to get what she got. All right, anyway, welcome back to the program, folks. Let me just get... You got a message that you're sending. I can't read it. So do you want to send it to me again? Oh, here it is. Oh, here is the link. Thank you very, very much, Dan. This is the link, folks, to this is the link. This is a cookie policy is what I've got here.
No, not that. This.
Oh, thank you. The Pursuits interview. Felix Baumgartner, the Austrian skydiver, talks about making the world's first. We're talking. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on right now. I've got on the line with me. Jeff Dowder, and we're talking about Mr. Baumgartner and the free fall. And Jeff, okay, we're talking about the free fall. Let's get back to that, okay, and forget about whether Margaret appreciates what the Elams are doing with their home.
I just think it's wrong that she slapped you across the facial area. And
did give a facial.
I didn't say she gave him a facial, man. I said she slapped him.
Never mind. Let's just talk about Mr. Baumgartner.
Mr. Who?
Baumgartner, the guy that, the skydiver?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, when you said Baumgartner. Yeah. Well, Mr. Baumgartner, when you step out of the aircraft and you free fall, this guy, it was 4 minutes from the time he left the craft until the time that till he landed. Okay? I mean, that dude is a very, very quick flight, Mr. Henry, from the craft down to where he landed. Now, a group of us have gotten together, and we are targeting 2014, April 6th. I don't know what day of the week that is, and it probably doesn't make any difference when you're talking about skydiving from a high elevation. But we just picked April the 6th.
What is significant about that date?
What's significant about that date is, but what's the date today?
I think it's April 6th, isn't it?
Yeah, well, so it's a year from now. I think that's why we did it. Or maybe not. I don't remember why we picked April.
Actually, today's the 5th.
So tomorrow's the 6th?
I mean, Saturday is the 6th. It is the 5th still on the West Coast. The rest of you guys, it's the 6th.
What?
Never mind, man. So the 6th is a Saturday.
All right, so next year it'll be a Sunday. So that's why, because Sunday, most of the guys will have the day off, and we can go out and leap out of a capsule, okay, or leap out of the balloon.
Wait. So the guys have Sunday off, so you can go up and leap out of a balloon.
Yeah.
Yeah, people are working.
And I'm sure that Baumgartner took that into consideration. What days does he have off?
What do you mean, what days does he have off? This is the guy's job, man. This is his job.
Well, it must be nice, man, but I got two other jobs I got to get to. So anyway, that's why we did that.
Now, you're going to try to break a record here, but it isn't going to be the record that of elevation necessarily, right?
Well, it'll be from 118,000 feet, but what we want to do is break the record of how long it took to get to the Earth. This guy, Baumgartner, wants me to believe that he broke the speed of sound, that his body at one point reached 843.6 miles per hour. Okay, you know, I mean, if that's what he says, that's what he said. He jumped from a height of 127,000 feet, 24 miles. He reached at a maximum speed of 843 miles an hour. And he spent a total of 4 minutes and 20 seconds in free fall, including a 13-second flat spin, rocketing through temperatures as low as 70.9 below zero.
How much time did it take him to get to Earth?
If you if you're counting the free fall plus when the chute opened. Probably, you know, 4 free fall. I mean, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, see, that's just it. I don't know how long it took him to get from the capsule down to the Earth.
Well, I mean, let's say it took, for instance, we know he was in free fall for 4 minutes.
Right, but then the chute opens, and how long is it going to take? What do you want, Margaret?
Are you looking at her? This woman doesn't believe how, she can't figure how lucky she is.
Are you still looking at the Elams, looking at this house?
Yes.
Forget it, will you? Go ahead.
What?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Wow, I'm looking at rainwater catchment system. Dig that.
Yeah, this is, can you believe it? So she's going to live in a beautiful home, and she's going to wash her hair and other parts of her body with recycled rainwater. Remind me if I ever get invited to that house not to accept a glass of water.
Why?
I'm not drinking a glass of water that she was using about 5 minutes before to wash her you-know-what.
Hey, that's a really good point.
Yeah, it is a good point.
Yeah, that's a good point. Go ahead, sir. We're talking about the free fall.
Yeah, 4 minutes of free fall. I don't know how long it took, but we're going to try to break that record. And the way we're going to try to break that record is by weighting our body. When I say our body, I mean the body of Billy Ketchum, who's going to be the host subject. It won't be me because I have a fear of heights. It'll be Billy Ketchum, who is the nephew of Toby Bo, as well as the son of Toby's sister, Arissa Bo. And anyway,
Billy Ketchum, does he have any experience as a skydiver?
Toby's going to take him to Lake Elsinore this summer, and they're going to do a lot of jumps. They're going to do a lot of jumps.
Okay, so the answer is no.
Well, I mean, how much experience does this other guy have?
So the answer is no. All right, thanks, Jeff. Good luck.
Yeah, well, don't you want to hear about Howard?
All right, so let's take a break. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Margaret, you get an eyeful of this five-bedroom home, and you're feeling really crappy because Jason Elam's gold-digging little wife is going to be living there?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I speak for a lot of women when I say, you know, you swamp-running...
Swamp-running slut?
Yes. You go down to the Bronco game, and you go, ooh... And you stick your butt out, and this poor farm boy hasn't got a chance. Next thing you know, he's spending millions so that you can have a rainwater catchment system to thoroughly scrub your blank. Thank you.
God. Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch.
Well, it's true.
The Phil Henry Show.
It's true.
Famous Phil Henry Show. I want to get on the line here. We got Lloyd Bonafide. Lloyd spent a little bit of time in Alaska because I want to get his take on the this Buying Alaska show. That's what you're watching here, Margaret. And you're looking at a gorgeous home. There's no question it's a gorgeous home. It's sitting right on the water there. But keep in mind that these homes don't have water. In other words, they don't have plumbing. They don't have the kind of central heat that you and I may think of when we own a home here in, you know, the lower 40 or lower 48, I should say.
Well, what are you talking about? They don't have heat.
Well, here's Lloyd. Lloyd, did you have a home in Alaska?
Let me, first of all, good evening to you, Phil, and good evening to you, Margaret. How are you?
Lloyd, I'm doing fine.
First of all, let's start at the beginning. Before I went into the Navy, and you know I'm a Navy veteran, Phil, before I went into the Navy, I spent a couple of summers in Alaska doing some timber removal, doing a little bit of logging, not much.
The logging.
What was that?
Oh, hold on for a minute. Don't do it, bud, because...
Is that that kid? Because if I hear that kid, it's not going to be pretty.
I just said all you said was you were said logging.
Yeah, so I said logging, so what?
Wait a minute. Don't get engaged. The two of you guys, please, okay? Just don't, I don't want to start with this. I'd rather that we just talk.
Hey, let me tell you what, Mr. Henry, I'm ready to talk, but if I hear that kid make these cracks about logging, because I know what he's saying. He's trying to make the reference that he's making.
Well, Lloyd, don't have to play into his hand.
No, but you don't understand. He's making a reference to a log being a bowel movement.
Yes, we know that.
Oh, you do know it?
Yes, we know that.
And did you hear him laugh just then?
Yeah, I heard him. I'm going to belt you. I did it yesterday. I'll do it again. You want that again, bud?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Henry, because if you don't, I will. And I'll tell you something, young man. If when I get it, you'll get it. You remember what the newspapers used to say? As soon as I get it, you get it. Well, guess what? If I get it, you will get it.
Get what?
If I get the information that you are pissing me off, you'll get it.
All right, we're all done with that. Now let's talk about Alaska.
Yes, so Alaska, I spent two summers up there doing lumber removal, a little bit of logging and lumber removal. And keep in mind, Bill, this was before the oil discoveries, but there was a great deal of shale, and there were oil pumps and oil rigs up there. We did a little bit of rough digging too.
In the 40s, huh?
In the 40s, that's right. Make a long story short, I spent some time. Now, let me tell you about living in Alaska. You are absolutely right when you say that there's no running water. You have to collect the rainwater. You then need to circulate that through the home. Now, if you've got some beautiful young wife like this guy's got here that I'm looking at on TV, and she thinks she's going up to a fairyland of Disney, you know, with a lot of Disney characters that are going to greet her and wipe her, excuse me for saying this, wipe her rear end for her, she's in for the shock of her life because it is hard living up there.
But the home they're looking at, it's a beautiful home.
Yeah, it's a beautiful home with no real... it's a beautiful home if you get enough rainwater in that thing. And if you will accept the fact that Tinkerbell isn't going to be there to wipe you when you use a toilet that you may have to prime before you can flush.
Well, can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Lloyd, you're talking about the easy living that a lot of us city slickers have. When you get up to Alaska, it's difficult. Now, you mentioned the rain. What about the heating?
Heating, I was getting to that. Heating is done with either oil, propane, or as Mr. Norcross just said.
Talk about Northcraft.
I'm sorry. Dan Northcraft said heating is done with the, what do you want to call, a wood fire. Now, some of these places do have jacuzzi, but in order to heat up a jacuzzi, you've got to have some way of heating it up. I don't know what are you going to do. And if you take your little girlfriend, and she spent the training camp of the Denver Bronco walking around with her pants off or whatever, and then you tell her you're going to go into the jacuzzi and it's not warm enough, she's going to squeal like a stuck pig under a gate, and you're going to be out one girlfriend. And these lodges, by the way, Phil and Margaret and Dickman, $1.8 million.
$1.8 million, huh?
$1,825,000, that's right.
Talking with Lloyd Bonafide about some of these Alaska properties, you guys are speaking in a very disparaging way about Mr. Elam's wife, which I don't think is entirely fair.
Look, I agree with Margaret in the sense that, don't tell me that if she moves up to Alaska, that girl had better cinch it up and show what she's got, because if it isn't a bear that's going to... You saw what happened to that one guy. He got a... See what happened to him? He got eaten by a bear, and then, for good measure, the bear snacked on his girlfriend, too. You know? So if Jason Elam goes up and buys himself a house in Alaska, and some bear snacks on him and the little groupie, you know, they'll go... let me tell you something, my friend. They'll go up there, and the only thing they'll find will be Jason Elam's cowboy hat and his girlfriend's cowboy hat, four separate boots, and that's it. And the hats will be sitting on the boots, because a lot of times they...
Okay, hold on for a minute, but we're getting into some... You're talking about being eaten by a bear.
Yes, this is irresponsible.
I'm telling you it's happened.
And then the hat will be sitting on the boots.
I'm telling you, as God is my witness, that there's the story of the Kuchner twins. They found two cowboy hats parked on boots.
And the bear eat them. The bear ate them.
The bear eat them? Get a load of him. That was my wife.
The bear ate them.
The bear ate the people, not the boots. I didn't say the bear ate them. The bear. Hey, I'm Phil Hendry. And the bear eat them.
That's very, very cute, Lloyd.
All right, see you later, Lloyd.
Oh, just because I got one offer on you, you're going to hang?
So, moral of the story, if you want to buy a house in Alaska, there's no water, no heat, the bear will eat you, and especially if you're an NFL player, your groupie gold-digging wife hasn't got a prayer. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I didn't say anything of the sort. You're just trying to make me look like a yahoo.
Phil Hendry.